Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live Sunday nights, this is the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. I want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news while working from home or tooling around the garage, homeschooling the kids, whatever. Just tell Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. So next up, I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with our current Attorney General, Derek Schmidt, who just recently announced that he's running for governor. We talked about that when we talked just yesterday. All right, we're here with Attorney General Derek Schmidt. Derek, thanks for joining us this evening.
My pleasure, John. Good to be with you.
General, it's nice to finally be together. It seems like the last couple of times we've had you on the show, it's had to be by phone. Wrapping up the convention, we just heard from Kristi Noem. It's been a great weekend. You've been busy. Obviously, the big announcement is that you're running for governor. I'm curious, you've really kind of steered away from politics by and large. I think part of that's because as Attorney General, you don't have to weigh into that so much. But I got to ask, why would you want to run for governor? You're definitely going to have to get into the political fray more.
Well, you and I served together a long time, John. Yep. When you were in the legislature and I was AG, and we worked together before that on a variety of things. And look, I think there are a lot of ways to serve this state in public service and public office. I've served in the legislature. I've served as attorney general. I believe I've got a lot to bring to the state, and I think we really need some pretty strong leadership going forward. I'm not a believer that Laura Kelly has got the right secret sauce, if you will, in terms of how to be a leader for the state. I think for a long time we've ignored really difficult issues. Some of them are the big, high-profile things we've talked about before, things like school funding, for example, which at its core, that's a constitutional structure issue. And we need to be talking about those sorts of things. Not that talking about them magically fixes them, but in a democracy and a republic, if you don't talk about big issues when you're the leader, you shouldn't be surprised if the public doesn't engage on big issues. I think part of the bully pulpit, or part of leadership, is using the bully pulpit in that way. And I think I've got the ability to do that on some of the bigger things we need to frame up. I also think it's not just the big issues. I mean, at the end of the day, the governor, in addition to being a leader for the state, is also the CEO of a $21 billion a year enterprise, which is hard for me to say. I can't believe the state spends $21 billion a year.
It didn't when I was in the legislature.
It didn't when I was in the legislature. Yeah. It was $15 billion a year when I left 10 years ago, and I thought that was astronomical. And now, here we are, two Republicans and a Democrat governor later, and spending's grown faster than it had grown in the first 150 years of state history. And part of that's a disconnect between, not telling folks what the real price of not making trade-offs, choices, and priorities is. So that's kind of the bully pulpit point. But the other point is, this is a big enterprise. There's always a lot of stuff that needs fixed. And I think finding and fixing those problems in state government, there's no glamour to it. I mean, people don't reward you for avoiding problems, but it's still your responsibility if you're the governor. And, one of the great examples of that I think people are sensitive to now is this whole debacle with the unemployment compensation system. I mean, it's a true statement, as Governor Kelly sometimes points out, that system was neglected for a decade under leadership of both parties. That is a true statement. Of course, what she doesn't tell you is that she was the top Democrat on the Ways and Means Committee for that entire decade.
Right.
And she could have led the charge on it just as well. So she owns that as well. And then, of course, once the mine blew up on her watch, it took her 10 months to put a Band-Aid on the wound. So there's plenty of blame to go around, but the point I draw from that is that that's not going to be an isolated incident. If you think that the unemployment compensation computer system is the only thing across the face of state government in a $21 billion a year enterprise that's been neglected, ignored, or just not done well, then, you know, I got a bridge in Brooklyn, I want to say, as the old saying goes. And I think it's incumbent upon whoever has the privilege of leadership to get out in front and fix that kind of stuff. So I just think I got something to offer here. Moving this state forward, fixing stuff needs fixed, giving us some direction, giving more conservative Kansans a voice. And I want to step up and offer myself, and we'll see what Kansans have to say.
So let's talk about the unemployment system. Yeah. You know, the we've got anywhere from $600 to $900 million in fraudulent claims. I know people, I'm sure you know people, who've had fraudulent claims filed in their names. You still have people I know who've been waiting 30, 60, 90 days still or longer, still waiting on claims, legitimate ones.
Yep.
How would you propose fixing this? And I think you're right. I think the governor, it was a problem that predates her. I think she's just made it worse, though.
I think that's true. My family's one of those that has the fraudulent claims. My wife got a 1099 for benefits that she didn't earn. At least she assures me she didn't lose a job during the year without telling me. And you'll be shocked to learn I've been unable to actually get a response from the Kansas Department of Labor once I filed the request for a corrected 1099. But we'll take care of all that stuff. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's an embarrassment to the state that this system has been allowed to fail, and that it was possible to pay crooks and fraudsters while we couldn't pay working Kansans who were actually entitled to benefits and needed the assistance at that point. I've taken to saying, I think you'll appreciate this, you know, you're having a bad day as the leader of any enterprise, especially a public enterprise like the Department of Labor of the state of Kansas, when the auditors accuse you of losing $600 million, and the best rebuttal you can come up with is, oh no, we only lost $300 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly where this debate has gone. I actually think that with respect to fixing that particular problem, we are now on the right path, because the legislature stepped up, they manhandled this, so to speak. They said, we're not going to just trust the administration anymore to get this right. They've shown they can't. They've set up this oversight structure to make sure that going forward, all the big decisions in terms of, you know, investing in the new computer system, the new software upgrades, in terms of staffing decisions, in terms of, you know, getting the feedback on whether these corrections are actually working, that's now not just going to be a governor's administration responsibility. We're actually going to have legislative input and oversight on it. So I feel pretty optimistic that that one is on the right path. It's just a matter of letting it play out now over time. But back to the other point, we don't know what we don't know, and what other landmines are sitting out there in state government unaddressed and unfixed.
You've been an advocate for a long time. I keep seeing, I get the press releases. You're involved in a lot of lawsuits right now. It seems like the Biden administration is just begging to be sued on any number of things. You're an attorney. I want to ask you a couple of things. Packing the courts, they've got now the D.C. statehood, so many of these things. I asked an attorney, well, I was actually Secretary Kobach the other day, and we were talking, and is it that they don't understand that, like, D.C. statehood isn't constitutional, or they don't care? I just don't understand this. They just don't care?
You know, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, John. You know me well enough to know that. But I do believe that sometimes there are larger forces afoot, and that the issue is not the issue. I actually think what's going on here is this. During, was it 2009 and 2010, when the Democrats had the presidency with Obama, and they, for that two-year period, they controlled the House and the Senate. And then they got beat bad because what they were selling, the American people weren't buying. I think the lesson that the Democrats drew out of that was that they didn't go big enough. That if you're only going to be in control for a couple of years, as they are right now, then you better try to get everything you have ever dreamed of, and you especially better prioritize, from their vantage point, the types of things that might have a chance of keeping you in control longer. That's why they're focused on H.R. 1, the election reform, which it wants to institutionalize pretty much every bad idea in terms of running elections that we saw during the pandemic, almost all of which benefited Democrat candidates around the country. That's why we're seeing the push on D.C. statehood, which I think is unconstitutional. We've told them that. My colleague from South Carolina and I sent a letter to the leadership in both chambers, said you can't do this. You can't just magically transform the District of Columbia, which is a federal constitutional creature, into another state. That's not how this works. We'll see if the Senate can stand strong and prevent that. But obviously that would give two more U.S. senators, almost certainly Democrats, which would tend to institutionalize the power that the folks on the other side have grabbed right now. And the same with packing the U.S. Supreme Court. They're just livid. I say that finally, there's a majority. Sometimes it's a slim majority because you never know where the Chief Justice is going to be. So we have five or six textualists, constitutionalists, folks that actually read the Constitution and apply it based on the words on the page. We have not had a functioning majority of textualists in this country on the U.S. Supreme Court since the 1930s, since Franklin Roosevelt bullied the court with his court packing plan, into abandoning what the text of the Constitution actually said and starting to approve things that you couldn't find if you read the document. We have been in that mode since the 30s. We're now back for the first time, less than a year, having a majority of textualists. And the folks on the other side are going absolutely nuts. And the reason they're going nuts is so much of what they want to do, you can't find a basis for it in the text of the U.S. Constitution. And somebody who reads the words and applies the words is anathema to them because, it's like slapping a child's hand when they want to reach out for something they're not supposed to be playing with. And so, structurally adding votes to the court would be a disaster. It'd be an absolute disaster because, I'll guarantee you it'll start an arms race. They do it now when they're in control.
Right, then we would turn.
We would do it then. And, the next thing you've got to rent out Carnegie Hall in order to have a Supreme Court hearing. I mean, it's just an irresponsible proposal motivated for all the wrong reasons. It has nothing to do with judicial efficiency, independence. It is entirely about they don't like the outcomes they're finally going to get. So it's very frustrating. And I think that's why it's so important that we push back very hard using whatever tools we have. We're all in different positions right now. We have different capacities to push back. I do a lot of it on the litigation front because those are the tools in front of me as Attorney General. But I think we have to stand up and say, you can't change our country. You can change some policies because you won some elections, but you're not going to be able to change our country, not without a fight.
The other thing that I think we've seen so much this week, I'd have to take off my shoes, I think, to count the number of vetoes that have come from the second floor this week. And some of them are just asinine. I mean, she vetoed the Gadsden flag license plate, but she, in so doing, she also vetoed a license plate for a black fraternity, cancer kids.
I'm not so sure about what was in the license plate bill.
The stuff that she's been vetoing has just been asinine. I'm assuming you make it through the primary. Governor Kelly has just been a disaster for the state. Tell me a little bit about your plan facing her, looking towards that administration and some of the disastrous policies that she's put forward.
Look, obviously, Laura Kelly's a liberal and I'm a conservative. And so we disagree just sort of philosophically and fundamentally on a lot of basic issues. No big surprises there. Folks, I suppose, knew that when they voted for her. I mean, we all knew that, where she was philosophically. And we certainly want to correct that in the next election for those of us on the right side of the political spectrum. Get Kansas back to where most Kansans are, which is a center-right state moving in a generally conservative direction. But even once you get beyond those sort of basic, unchanging philosophical differences between her and me, I make this point, and maybe you've looked at it this way as well, but during calendar year 2020, the pandemic year, there were 14 bills passed by the legislature that the governor signed into law. 18 passed, she vetoed 4, 14 became law. That is not very many, as you know from the legislature. And that's, of course, because the legislature quit early and went home abruptly because of the pandemic. During that same calendar year, the governor signed more than 60 executive orders that had the force and effect of law. Now, you think about that. In the middle of perhaps one of the most stressful years in modern Kansas history in terms of dealing with the pandemic and all of the fallout, when we've got to make difficult decisions, like we just heard Governor Noem say, making tough decisions about forking the road. Are we going to shut down businesses? Are we not going to shut them down? We're going to shut churches? Are we not going to shut them? We're going to shut schools? Are we not going to shut them? Instead of engaging in the ordinary way we decide hard questions together, the legislative process, that was all bypassed. Right. It was four times as much law created by executive decree. So the legislature largely, I think, has fixed that with overhauling the emergency management laws. And now we're into 2021, and we're up to, I think it's now 8 vetoes, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, she's vetoed everything. You talk about the license plate bills. Yeah, yes, she did that, but she vetoed
gun safety.
Very reasonable gun safety legislation. She's vetoed very reasonable tax relief legislation. She's vetoed very reasonable legislation to lock in the fundamental notion that has always been so in this state for almost all Kansans. You know, the girls play girls' sports and boys don't play girls'
Novel
sports.
Novel concept.
I absolutely right. I mean, this is just common sense stuff that the vast majority of Kansans agree on and shouldn't be particularly controversial. And yet we're up to 8 vetoes. And so, you know, I've started telling folks, I think the most dangerous weapon in Kansas is an ink pen in the hand of Laura Kelly, whether it's issuing executive decrees or vetoing good public policy. And of course, you know, we're Republicans. We don't believe in ink pen control. We believe in actually some responsibility for the person using the weapon. And I think that that's probably the strongest argument to defeat her and replace her with a solid Republican governor going forward.
Well, if along those lines, if folks are interested, I know right now you're just kind of, you're gearing up. But if people are interested, if they want to volunteer, or just as importantly, if they want to donate, where can they go to get more information?
I welcome all support, help, and input. We are building the team, which is how you win these races in Kansas. It's not just about the air game. It's also about people, which is how it's supposed to be focused. We've got a website. It is schmittforkansas.com, Schmidt, F-O-R, Kansas.com. Or if you can't remember that, if you go to derekschmidt.com, it'll redirect you over there, or Google us. But we would welcome folks. You can go on there and volunteer. You can donate. You can read a little bit more. You can send us information. We're going to get this thing done.
Well, General, appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us again. Well, I'm sure we'll have you on the show again soon.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, John.
Thanks, General.
Take care.
When we come back, we're going to play my recording with former Secretary of State Chris Kobach. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk.